Hi folks, this is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 33. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Chime in with comments and such on the blog or show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. That's B-L-O-G. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts, where you'll get email notifications when a new episode has been released or other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. All right, let's get to it. Today, I do also want to talk about whenever you're posting on the blog. I'd appreciate it if you left any of your responses. Please use English. I can't moderate what goes on the blog if it's written in Spanish or Portuguese or Russian or another language. I think it's great that people all around the world are listening to the Guitar Podcast, but I need to be sure that what's being posted on there is appropriate for my audience, and I want to be sure that it's all. So please, if you're going to post there, post it in English. So let's get started. Kind of have a smorgasbord of things to talk about today, which seems to be the norm anymore. Winter NAMM is on, and I'm totally jealous of anybody who is able to go. Maybe one day the Guitar Podcast will be so big that they'll send lowly Lauren an invite. That would be so cool. I've always wanted to go to the NAMM show since I was a little kid, and so anyway, if anybody is associated with NAMM, they're like, yeah, Lauren, you should go. That'd be cool. I'll bring you along. Hey, drop me a line. I'd love to go. I really would. But, you know, the next best thing to going to NAMM and not paying the travel fees and, you know, flight and you know, airline fees or gas or hotel room and, you know, all that hassle, turn on your computer, go to YouTube, and type in NAMM 2011. And that's just what I did. And I've browsed around a few places there, and I've found a few things that I think are really cool. And I'll leave links to these in the show notes. But one that came to me, I've signed up for email from TC Electronic. You know, I'm a big fan of their Nova line of pedals. And they've come out with the Tone Print pedals, which are, you know, normal size pedals, like single space pedal enclosures. And they have like distortion and delay and chorus and flange and things like that. And they're really cool. And I'm guessing they're true bypass. I'm not sure. I haven't done a whole lot of research on them, but it's something you could check out and something they're pushing at NAMM this year or this winter. And the cool feature about it is that you could dial it into whatever you want, and I'm sure that it'll sound really cool just from your selection, and it, because TC Electronic makes great gear. But some of the pedals have dip switches inside of them so that you can change things around. But something that's even cooler is that they have it so that you can plug your pedal into your computer using a USB cable, and download world-famous guitar player settings specific for that pedal. And it comes with a Tone Print stock from the factory that you may or may not like. And then you can plug it into your pedal and download free Tone Prints for that pedal by a famous guitar player that you may or also may not like. Now then, I don't know if it's something that once you download that, if you can modify that a little bit, say the delay is a little long and you like everything else about it, or the mix is a little heavy, if you could modify that. Something I've seen here on the message board is that people were talking about being able to have access to the software to be able to make their own Tone Print as a preset, so that then you could just turn the knob and away from the tone print and dial in, say, a slap back or whatever, and you know, playing normal with it, and then for one song, just, you know, bend down and turn it to the tone print, and boom, you have this whole another setting for your pedal already preset. The only real concerns I have for it without playing on it is that, you know, there's a lot of digital aspects to this sort of a feature on a pedal, and most of my pedals, well, all my pedals are analog except for my Nova Delay. So, kind of see where I'm going with this. Anyway, I'm going to post a link to TC Electronics' Tori Mogensen explaining what is tone print, and he's back in a studio, and you can also click through and find other, you know how YouTube shows you suggested videos that are related to the video you're watching. You can see them live at the NAMM show, and they talk about it more, and they demonstrate them more. And it's really kind of cool, but I encourage you to check it out. Also, I've talked about mod tone pedals before. Very, very affordable. I'm going to put a link in here for a demo of them live from the Winter NAMM show 2011. And they have basically, it shows like 30 stomp boxes, their power supply, guy demos it. Maybe the audio isn't quite as good as it could be. And I don't know that he was able to dial in some things, but there's a pedal when he gets to the tremolo pedal. It's a tremor pedal. It's really super choppy. And I was like, wow, that sounds super cool. It's one that I'd love to play on. And I mean, I know I could do my favorite Voivod song on that. It'd just be so cool. Astronomy Domine. That's super cool. Moving on, Orange Amplifiers has a black box that will basically bias any amp, and it's really unique. And I don't know how much I would, you'd have to think that you could trust it, but I don't know that I would trust it on certain amps, like my vintage amps. But if I had a newer amp, then it's like, yeah, not a big deal. My 1956 Gibson GA40, no. I would not plug that thing into it. I don't know. I'm sure Orange did all their homework and it'd be just fine. I would be a little skeptical with that. But then again, it could be insurance to be sure that everything is regulated for your amp if should something go wrong. One of the things that they were talking about with this is that you could potentially plug in several different kinds of power tubes in your amp, like KT66 or EL34, side by side, and it would bias it and make it run just fine, which is kind of a crazy concept. Something else I found here is Roland's first look at the Roland GR55 guitar synthesizer. Now, you guys know I'm more of an analog guy, kind of old-fashioned and all that, but I couldn't resist. I'd probably never buy a guitar synthesizer, but this was really cool. He made this guitar sound like all sorts of different kinds of instruments, and as well as a guitar, of course. And he was a fantastic guitar player, but anything I talk about at the NAMM show here, I'm going to post links to the videos in the show notes on the blog. I'd suggest you check it out, just for fun. You may dig it, you may not. Enough about NAMM. My wife was just asking me about my amp. My GA40 is sitting at the church, and I was playing it Wednesday night at practice, and it sounded great when I first plugged in and everything. And then when we were done, I was taking it down. It had a hum, and I was like, oh no, what's going on? Is it a bad tube or a cap or something like that? And it sounded fine when we were playing, but it just had this hum. And I thought, well, it'll get me through the weekend, and I'll figure something out. And when I came back this morning and played, it still had the hum, and I thought, well, let's start first with the amp. So I unplugged the cable from the input to see if the amp by itself made any noise. Well, it didn't. The amp by itself sounded fine. So I plugged it back in. So that made me feel better that more than likely there's nothing wrong with the amp. So next thing I'm going to do is go through my signal chain on my pedal board, see if there's something there, which I wouldn't be surprised if I have a bad cable there or something is amiss in my pedal chain. If nothing is amiss there, which I think I'll find the culprit there. There may be something, maybe with the cable from my pedal board to the direct box into the snake that also comes out into another cable into a direct box and then into my amp. Which I kind of doubt. They have really, really good stuff. Not that I don't have really good stuff, but you know, that very well could be another issue, but I really doubt it. I think the issue probably lies in my pedal board. Of course, then again, I do have a red coily cable that's coming from the direct box that goes right into my amp, and that guy could be the culprit too. I don't even remember what brand name that is, but in a process of troubleshooting just slowly. At least I don't think it's the amp. I think it's my pedal board. So now then, I think last time I talked with you guys that I was talking about some cool stuff I got for Christmas, and some that I was really excited to get into were some Les Paul guitar books. And one my sister's family got me was the Les Paul guitar book, A Complete History of Gibson Les Paul Guitars by Tony Bacon. Very cool. I finished it up, and it's a really nice overview. It's not a huge book. It's maybe 3/4 inch thick. There's a lot of notes in the back of it. The actual reading content is only about 137 pages. Covers each decade. Talks a bit about Les Paul in the beginning, and then how he became affiliated with Gibson, and they're making the solid body electric, and its evolution through the 50s. And it just amazes me how much it changed right there in the 50s. And then they just abandoned it in 1960 and made the solid guitar, the SG Les Paul, and went with that instead of what we traditionally consider the Les Paul, and then bringing it back in the late 60s. And in the 60s, people were begging, you know, musicians were begging for the 50s style burst, but they wouldn't bring it back. They brought back the custom, but then I think it's a pretty good book. I think it does really dive into some things that I didn't know, or clarified some things for me. It's a nice overview. There's a lot of information in there. And I think the author does voice some of his own opinions in the book, but I mean, he wrote the book. He can do that. I mean, this isn't just straight text for a school or whatever, that it's just the facts, ma'am, you know. So, you know, he can take the liberty to do that if he wants. It sounds like from his opinion that, of course, the Norlin years, which was, late 1969 or 70 through 1983, certainly the reputation for Gibson guitars at that time, the quality did go down a bit. Something that was encouraging to me was that they were still making guitars in Kalamazoo, Michigan up through 1974, but in 75 I think they moved everything down to Nashville. But I think it was only the Les Paul that was being made in Nashville. I think, and I'm not for sure on this, if any of you know and you want to chime in and say, Lauren, the SG was made in Nashville too, but I think the SG was made up until they closed the Kalamazoo factory, but the SG was still being made up in Kalamazoo. And that would tell me that my 1974 SG Standard, that has such great tone and intonation and everything, was made in Kalamazoo, which makes me feel better about things, of course. Oh, another thing is that they had a comment from some of the workers from Kalamazoo, and one of them was saying that, you know, the early New Orleans years, things were still were all hunky dory up in Kalamazoo, but after 1974, things got a little weird. So, but things were pretty good up there. It's just a little aside there. In the back of the book is a reference guide to all the different kinds of Les Pauls, the features and things like that, and how to date your Les Pauls, with serial numbers and such. Of course, I had a PDF I downloaded from a Gibson site back, I don't know, what was it, back in like 2002 or something, so that I could date my 87, be sure that it was an 87. Oh, and I also found out how to date your 70s Les Pauls and SGs, because their serial numbering system up through like 76 is really, really weird. So my SG really conceivably could be a 74 or a 75, but I was told a 74, and I prefer to think that it's a 74. But that the if you look on the tone pots and if you look on the potentiometers inside the control cavity, you'll see a number there. Now, the last two digits on that number, it could be like a six-digit number or something like that, but the last two digits on there indicate the week of the year that it was made. It was indicating that my guitar, it said 30. So I'm estimating somewhere around July 1974 is when it was made. It's kind of a cool thing. Oh, imagine that. My wife just told me that, she just reminded me that, yeah, hey, that was when I was born. Duh. Yeah, Lauren. Yeah, her birthday's July 10th, 1974. Why didn't I put that together? We were just talking about that the other night, too. I was like, yeah, well, I took the back off and showed her. I said, oh, 30. And we did the math real quick. I said, that makes it probably about July in 1974. Neither one of us put it together, so you can't put that on me. I'm not in the doghouse for that one. But anyway, the next two books I have to read, which I can give a little mini book report on them as well, they are much thicker. They're about an inch and a half thick each, and they're hardbound. And, I mean, there's like volume one and volume two, like the early years, and then the later years are modern era. And I think it's kind of a deeper dive into the history of Les Paul and the guitar. I just can't wait to get into it. Just to track back a little bit about playing at church this morning, you know, as a lead guitar player, most of the time, or, you know, just as a guitar player in a band with a lot of instruments, if I mess up, most of the time, people aren't going to notice it. It's easy to gloss over, especially in a live situation. Well, this morning, the very first song we played, supposed to have four measures of just the drummer bringing us into the song, and then we all hit it on the fifth measure. And I'm playing this kind of a droning, sliding thing. It's really heavy. It's 140 beats per minute, so it's pretty quick. I mean, it's boom, 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 boom. It's going. And I'm excited. We get up there, first service, and I'm like ready to go. The coffee's still going. I mean, and I hear the cue in my ear, the monitor in my ear is like, one, two, ready, go. And I'm like, yeah, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, wa-na-na-na-na. I start playing, and the drummer's going, and I'm like, yeah. And I go through all four parts of it, and I stop, and I hold, and I'm like looking around, and the singers aren't singing. I go, oh, yeah, I was supposed to wait four measures. And you know, you really can't hide that kind of a screw-up, but, yeah, I could laugh at it now. I wasn't really happy with myself at that time, but, and, you know, the thing is, I know I messed up in other places, probably in that song and in many other instances, but most of the time, it just gets glossed right on over because it's, you know, playing lead, you're kind of freelancing or being really creative and doing whatever you want within the parameters of the song and not trying to take away from it, as we've talked about before. But it's kind of funny how, I don't want to mess up. But most of the time, if I do in a live situation, nobody's going to notice. But if that was a recording, these minor mistakes would definitely be obvious to anybody listening. So after that first set, we talked about it a little bit and joked around. And I said, yeah, Lauren was a little bit, a little bit too anxious getting that song going. I said, yeah, I had a false start for football terms. Because, it is the NFL playoffs right now, and I love the NFL. I love football. And I think it's amazing that the Jets beat the New England Patriots, and we'll meet the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC Championship game next week. That proves that could be a really, really, really good game. And I don't know. I know a lot of people don't like Rex Ryan, but I do. I kind of dig his bravado. And I know this isn't the football podcast, but I just had to throw that out there. And just for the record, so that if the Jets win the Super Bowl, I could be the guy that said the Jets are going to win the Super Bowl. I bet they do. I wouldn't be surprised. The way they beat my Colts last week, they're running the ball, playing great defense. They played old-fashioned playoff football. And my wife's looking at me going, you're way off topic here. I know. Okay. Sorry, but okay, for the record, if the Jets win, I said the Jets will win the Super Bowl. If they don't, who cares? How many times were wrong? I said New England's going to win the Super Bowl before. So anyway, I know enough is enough. I know many of you probably don't care anything about football, but I love it. It's second to guitars, and both are distant seconds to my lovely wife, my daughters. So. Yeah, I hope you hear her laughing. And she'll probably laugh and laugh and laugh and won't be able to stop. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the blog or show notes. Comment on the guitar on the blog or show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog if you liked what you heard today and subscribed using iTunes or Zune. Please let them know by writing a review. I really dig it. I really appreciate it. And thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.